have a boyfriend doesn't mean I can't look. And as much as Chris drools over Nicki Minaj, Beyonce, and Amber Rose, I dare him to get mad at me for looking. On a side note, my boyfriend clearly has a type. This Vontae guy's around my age, a little taller, with a big afro puff, and the faint signs of a mustache. He has some nice lips, too. Real plump and soft. I've looked at them too long. He licks them and smiles. I had to make sure you and little mama were okay. And that ruins it. Don't call me by a nickname if you don't know me. Yeah, we're fine, I say.
Them GDs helped you out anyway, he tells Seven. She was killing you out here.
Man, shut up, Seven says. This is my sister, Star.
Oh, yeah, the guy says. You the one who work up in Big Mav's store, ain't you?
Like I said, I get that all the time. Yep, that's me.
Star, this is Devontae, Seven says. He's one of King's boys.
Devontae? So this is the dude Kenya fought over.
Yeah, that's me.
He looks at me from head to toe and licks his lips again.
You heard about me or something?
All that lip licking. Not cute. Yeah, I've heard about you. And you may want to get some chapstick if your lips that dry, since you're licking them so much.
Damn, it's like that? What she means is thanks for helping us out, Seven says.
Even though that's not what I meant.
We appreciate it.
It's all good. Them fools running around here because the riot's happening on their side. It's too hot for them over there.
What you doing in the park this early anyway?
Seven asks. He shoves his hands in his pockets and shrugs.
Post it up. You know how it go.
He's a D-boy. Damn. Kenya really knows how to pick them. Anytime drug-dealing gangbangers are your type, you've got some serious issues. Well, King is her daddy.
I heard about your brother. Seven says, I'm sorry, man. Dalvin was a cool dude.
Devontae kicks at a pebble on the court.
Thanks. Mom's taking it real hard. That's why I'm here. Had to get out the house.
Dalvin? Devontae? I tilt my head. Your mama named y'all after them dudes from that old group Jodeci? I only know because my parents loved them some Jodeci.
Yeah, so?
It was just a question. You don't have to have an attitude. A white Tahoe screeches to a stop on the other side of the fence. Daddy's Tahoe. His window rolls down. He's in a wife beater and pillow marks zigzag across his face. I pray he doesn't get out, because knowing Daddy, his legs are ashy and he's wearing Nike flip-flops with socks.
What the hell y'all thinking, leaving the house without telling nobody?
He yells. The King Lords across the street bust out laughing. Devontae coughs into his fist like he wants to laugh, too. Seven and I look at everything but Daddy.
Oh, y'all want to act like y'all don't hear me? Answer me when I'm talking to you!
The King Lords howl with laughter.
Pops, we just came to play ball, Seven says.
I don't care! All this shit going on and y'all leave? Get in this truck!
God damn, I say under my breath. Always gotta act a fool.
What you say?
He barks. The King Lords howl louder. I want to disappear. Nothing, I say.
Nah, it was something. Tell you what, don't climb the fence. Go round to the entrance, and I bet not beat y'all there.
He drives off. Shit. I grab my ball. And Seven and I haul ass across the park. The last time I ran this fast, Coach was making us do suicides. We get to the entrance as Daddy pulls up. I climb in the back of the truck, and Seven's dumb butt gets in the passenger seat. Daddy drives off.
"You lost your minds," he says. "People rioting, damn near calling the National Guard around here, and y'all want to play ball."
"Why you have to embarrass us like that?" Seven snaps.
I'm so glad I'm in the back seat.
Daddy turns toward Seven, not even looking at the road, and growls,
You ain't too old.
Seven stares ahead. Steam is just about coming off him.
Daddy looks at the road again.
Got some goddamn nerve talking to me like that because some king lords were laughing at you. What, you kinging now?
Seven doesn't respond.
I'm talking to you, boy.
No, sir.
He bites out.
So why you care what they think? You want to be a man so damn bad, but men don't care what nobody thinks.
He pulls into our driveway. Not even halfway up the walkway, I see Mama through the screen on the door, in her nightgown, her arms folded and her bare foot tapping.
Get in this house!
She shouts. She paces the living room as we come in. The question isn't if she'll explode, but when. Seven and I sink onto her good sofa.
Where were y'all?
She asks.
And you better not lie.
The basketball court, I mumble, staring at my J's. Mama leans down close to me and puts her hand to her ear.
What was that?
I didn't hear you good.
Speak up, girl,
Daddy says. The basketball court, I repeat louder.
The basketball court!
Mama straightens up and laughs.
She said the basketball court.
Her laughter stops, and her voice gets louder with each word.
I'm walking around here worried out my mind, and y'all at the damn basketball court?
Somebody giggles in the hallway.
Sekani, go to your room,
Mama says without looking that way. His feet thump hurriedly down the hall.
I hollered and told y'all we were leaving, I say.
Oh, she hollered,
Daddy mocks.
Did you hear anybody holler, baby? 'Cause I didn't.
Mama sucks her teeth.
Neither did I.
She can wake us up to ask for some money, but she can't wake us up to tell us she's going in a war zone.
It's my fault, Seven says. I wanted to get her out the house and do something normal.
Baby, there's no such thing as normal right now, says Mama. You see what's been happening, and y'all were crazy enough to go out there like that?
Dumb enough is more like it,
Daddy adds. I keep my eyes on my shoes.
Hand over your phones,
Mama says.
What?
I shriek.
That's not fair. I hollered and told y'all.
Star Amara?
She says through her teeth. Since my first name is only one syllable, she has to throw my middle name in there to break it down.
If you don't hand me that phone, I swear to God.
I open my mouth, but she goes,
Say something else. I dare you, say something else. I'll take all them Jordans, too.
This is some bullshit, for real. Daddy watches us, her attack dog, waiting for us to make a wrong move. That's how they work. Mama does the first round, and if it's not successful, Daddy goes for the KO, and you never want Daddy to go for the KO. Seven and I hand her our phones.
I thought so, she says,
and passes them to Daddy.
Since y'all want normal so much, go get your stuff. We're going to Carlos's for the day.
Nah, not him.
Daddy motions Seven to get up.
He going to the store with me.
Mama looks at me and jerks her head toward the hall.
Go. I ought to make you take a shower, smelling like outside.
As I'm leaving, she hollers,
And don't get any skimpy stuff to wear to Carlos's either.
Oh, she gets on my nerves. See, Chris lives down the street from Uncle Carlos. I am glad she didn't say any more in front of Daddy, though. Bricks meets me at my bedroom door. He jumps up my legs and tries to lick my face. I had about 40 shoeboxes stacked in a corner, and he knocked all of them over. I scratch behind his ears. Clumsy dog. I would take him with us, but they don't allow pits in Uncle Carlos's neighborhood. He settles on my bed and watches me pack. I only really need my swimsuit and some sandals, but Mama could decide to stay out there the whole weekend because of the riots. I pack a couple of outfits and get my school backpack. I throw each backpack over a shoulder.
Come on, Bricks. He follows me to his spot in the backyard, and I hook him up to his chain. While I refill Bricks's food and water bowls, Daddy crouches beside his roses and examines the petals. He waters them like he's supposed to, but for some reason they're dry-looking.
Come on now, he tells them. Y'all gotta do better than this.
Mama and Sakani wait for me in her Camry. I end up in the passenger seat. It's childish, but I don't want to sit this close to her right now. Unfortunately, it's either sit next to her or sit next to Sir Farts-a-Lot Sakani. I'm staring straight ahead, and out the corner of my eye, I see her looking at me. She makes this sound like she's about to speak, but her words decide to come out as a sigh. Good. I don't want to talk to her either. I'm being petty as hell and don't even care. We head for the freeway, passing the Cedar Grove Projects where we used to live. We get to Magnolia Avenue, the busiest street in Garden Heights, where most of the businesses are located. Usually on Saturday mornings, guys around the neighborhood have their cars on display, cruising up and down the street and racing each other. Today the street's blocked off. A crowd marches down the middle of it. They're holding signs and posters of Khalil's face and are chanting, "Justice for Khalil!" I should be out there with them. But I can't join that march, knowing I'm one of the reasons they're protesting. You know none of this is your fault, right? Mama asks. How in the world did she do that? I know. I mean it, baby. It's not. You did everything right. But sometimes right's not good enough, huh? She takes my hand, and despite my annoyance, I let her. It's the closest thing I get to an answer for a while. Saturday morning traffic on the freeway moves smoothly compared to weekday traffic. Sakani puts his headphones on and plays with his tablet. Some 90s R&B songs play on the radio, and Mama sings along under her breath. When she really gets into it, she attempts all kinds of runs and goes, "Yes, girl, yes!" Out of nowhere, she says, "You weren't breathing when you were born." My first time hearing that. For real? Uh-huh. I was 18 when I had you. Still a baby myself, but I thought I was grown. Wouldn't admit to anybody that I was scared to death. Your Nana thought there was no way in hell I could be a good parent. Not wild Lisa. I was determined to prove her wrong. I stopped drinking and smoking, went to all of my appointments, ate right, took my vitamins, the whole nine. Shoot, I even played Mozart on some headphones and put them on my belly. You see what good that was. You didn't finish a month of piano lessons. I laugh. Sorry. It's okay. Like I was saying, I did everything right. I remember being in that delivery room, and when they pulled you out, I waited for you to cry. But you didn't. Everybody ran around, and your father and I kept asking what was wrong. Finally, the nurse said you weren't breathing. I freaked out. Your daddy couldn't calm me down. He was barely calm himself. After the longest minute of my life, you cried. I think I cried harder than you, though. I knew I did something wrong. But one of the nurses took my hand. Mama grabs my hand again, looked me in the eye, and said, "Sometimes you can do everything right, and things will still go wrong. The key is to never stop doing right." She holds my hand for the rest of the drive. I used to think the sun shone brighter out here in Uncle Carlos's neighborhood, but today it really does. There's no smoke lingering, and the air is fresher. All the houses have two stories. Kids play on the sidewalks and in the big yards. There are lemonade stands, garage sales, and lots of joggers. Even with all that going on, it's real quiet. We pass Maya's house a few streets over from Uncle Carlos's.
I would text her and see if I could come over, but, you know, I don't have my phone. You can't visit your little friend today, Mama says, reading my mind once a freaking again. You're grounded. My mouth flies wide open, but she can come over to Carlos's and see you. She glances at me out the corner of her eye with a half smile. This is supposed to be the moment I hug her and thank her and tell her she's the best. Not happening. I say, cool, whatever, and sit back. She busts out laughing. You are so stubborn. No, I'm not. Yes, you are, she says, just like your father. Soon as we pull into Uncle Carlos's driveway, Sakani jumps out. Our cousin Daniel waves at him from down the sidewalk with some other boys, and they're all on their bikes. Later, Mama, Sakani says. He runs past Uncle Carlos, who's coming out the garage, and grabs his bike. Sakani got it for Christmas, but he keeps it at Uncle Carlos's house because Mama's not about to let him ride around Garden Heights. He pedals down the driveway. Mama hops out and calls after him. Don't go too far! I get out, and Uncle Carlos meets me with a perfect Uncle Carlos hug. Not too tight, but so firm that it tells me how much he loves me in a few seconds. He kisses the top of my head twice and asks,
How are you doing, baby girl?
Okay, I sniff. Smoke's in the air. The good kind, though. You barbecuing?
Just heated the grill up. Gonna throw some burgers and chicken on for lunch.
I hope we don't end up with food poisoning, Mama teases.
Ah, look who's trying to be a comedian, he says. You'll be eating your words and everything I cook, baby sis, because I'm about to throw down. Food Network doesn't have anything on me.
And he pops his collar. Lord, he's so corny sometimes. Aunt Pam tends to the grill on the patio. My little cousin Ava sucks her thumb and hugs Aunt Pam's leg. The second she sees me, she comes running. Star, star! Her ponytails fly as she runs, and she launches herself into my arms. I swing her around, getting a whole lot of giggles out of her. How's my favorite 3-year-old in the whole wide world doing? Good! She sticks her wrinkly, wet thumb back in her mouth. Hey, Auntie Lily. Hey, baby. You been good? Ava nods too much. No way she's been that good. Aunt Pam lets Uncle Carlos handle the grill and greets Mama with a hug. She has dark brown skin and big, curly hair. Nana likes her because she comes from a good family. Her mom is an attorney, and her dad is the first black chief of surgery at the same hospital where Aunt Pam works as a surgeon. Real-life Huxtables, I swear. I put Ava down, and Aunt Pam hugs me extra tight. How are you doing, sweetie? Okay. She says she understands, but nobody really does. Nana comes busting out the back door with her arms outstretched. My girls! That's the first sign something's up. She hugs me and Mama and kisses our cheeks. Nana never kisses us, and she never lets us kiss her. She says she doesn't know where our mouths have been. She frames my face with her hands, talking about, Thank the Lord he spared your life. Hallelujah! So many alarms go off in my head. Not that she wouldn't be happy that the Lord spared my life, but this isn't Nana, at all. She takes me and Mama by our wrists and pulls us toward the poolside loungers. Y'all come over here and talk to me. But I was going to talk to Pam. Nana looks at Mama and hisses through gritted teeth, Shut the hell up, sit down, and talk to me, goddammit. Now that's Nana. She sits back in a lounger and fans herself all dramatically. She's a retired theater teacher, so she does everything dramatically. Mama and I share a lounger and sit on the side of it. What's wrong? Mama asks. When? She begins, but plasters on a fake smile when Ava waddles over with her baby doll and a comb. Ava hands both to me and goes to play with some of her other toys. I comb the doll's hair. That girl has me trained. Doesn't have to say anything, and I do it. Once Ava's out of earshot, Nana says,
When y'all taking me back to my house?
What happened? Mama asks.
Keep your damn voice down.
Ironically, she's not keeping hers down.
Yesterday morning, I took some catfish out for dinner. Was gonna fry it up with some hush puppies, fries, the whole nine. I left to run some errands.
What kind of errands? I ask, for the hell of it. Nana cuts me the look, and it's like seeing Mama in 30 years with a few wrinkles and gray hair she missed when coloring her hair. She'd whip my behind for saying that.
I'm grown, little girl, she says. Don't ask me what I do. Anyway, I come home, and that heifer done covered my catfish in some damn cornflakes and baked it.
Cornflakes, I say, parting the doll's hair.
Yes, talking about it's healthier that way. If I want healthy, I eat a salad.
Mama covers her mouth, and the edges of her lips are turned up. I thought you and Pam got along.
We did, until she messed with my food. Now, I've dealt with a lot of things since I've been here, but that, she holds up a finger, is taking it too damn far. I'd rather live with you and that ex-con than deal with this.
Mama stands and kisses Nana's forehead. You'll be all right. Nana waves her off. When Mama leaves, she looks at me.
You okay, little girl? Carlos told me you were in the car with that boy when he was killed.
Yes, ma'am. I'm okay.
Good. And if you're not, you will be. We're strong like that.
I nod. But I don't believe it. At least, not about myself. The doorbell rings up front. I say, I'll get it. Put Ava's doll down and go inside. Crap. Chris is on the other side of the door. I want to apologize to him, but damn it. I need time to prepare. Weird, though. He's pacing. The same way he does when we study for tests or before a big game. He's afraid to talk to me. I open the door and lean against the frame. Hey.
Hey.
He smiles. And despite everything, I smile too.
I was washing one of my dad's cars and saw you guys pull up, he says.
That explains his tank top, flip-flops, and shorts.
Are you okay? I know you said you were in your text, but I wanted to be sure.
I'm okay, I say.
Your dad's store didn't get hit, did it?
He asks. Nope.
Good.
Staring and silence. He sighs.
Look, if this is about the condom stuff, I'll never buy one again.
Never?
Well, only when you want me to, he quickly adds, which doesn't have to be any time soon. Matter of fact, you don't have to ever sleep with me. Or kiss me. Hell, if you don't want me to touch you, I...
Chris. Chris, I say, my hands up to get him to slow down, and I'm fighting a laugh. It's okay. I know what you mean.
Okay.
Okay. Another round of staring and silence. I'm sorry, actually, I tell him, shifting my weight from foot to foot, for giving you the silent treatment. It wasn't about the condom.
Oh,
his eyebrows meet.
Then what was it about?
I sigh. I don't feel like talking about it.
So you can be mad at me, but you can't even tell me why?
It has nothing to do with you.
Yeah, it does, if you're giving me the silent treatment. he says. You wouldn't understand.
Maybe you should let me determine that myself, he says. Here I am calling you, texting you everything, and you can't tell me why you're ignoring me? That's kind of shitty, Star.
I give him this look, and I have a strong feeling I look like Mama and Nana right now with their "I know you didn't just say that" glare. I told you, you wouldn't understand, so drop it.
No.
He folds his arms.
I came all the way down here.
All the way? Bruh, all what way? Down the street? Garden Heights Star is all up in my voice right now.
Yeah, down the street, he says. And guess what? I didn't have to do that, but I did. And you can't even tell me what's going on.
You're white, okay? I yell. You're white! Silence.
I'm white?
He says, like he's just hearing that for the first time.
What the fuck's that got to do with anything?
Everything! You're white! I'm black! You're rich! I'm not!
That doesn't matter, he says. I don't care about that kind of stuff, Star. I care about you.
That kind of stuff is part of me.
Okay, and it's no big deal. God, seriously, this is what you're pissed about? This is why you're giving me the silent treatment?
I stare at him, and I know, I'm straight up looking like Lisa Janae Carter. My mouth is slightly open like hers when I or my brothers get smart, as she calls it. I've pulled my chin back a little, and my eyebrows are raised. Shit, my hand's even on my hip. Chris takes a small step back, just like my brothers and I do.
It doesn't make sense to me, okay? That's all.
So like I said, you don't understand, do you?
Bam. If I'm acting like my mom, this is one of her, see, I told you, moments. No, I guess I don't,
he says. Another round of silence. Chris puts his hands in his pockets.
Maybe you can help me understand? I don't know. But I do know that not having you in my life is worse than not making beats or playing basketball. And you know how much I love making beats and playing basketball, Star.
I smirk. You call that a line? He bites his bottom lip and shrugs. I laugh. He does too.
Bad line, huh? He asks.
Awful. We go silent again, but it's the type of silence I don't mind. He puts his hand out for mine. I still don't know if I'm betraying who I am by dating Chris, but I've missed him so much it hurts. Mama thinks coming to Uncle Carlos's house is normal. But Chris is the kind of normal I really want. The normal where I don't have to choose which star to be. The normal where nobody tells you how sorry they are or talks about Khalil the drug dealer. Just normal. That's why I can't tell Chris I'm the witness. I take his hand, and everything suddenly feels right. No flinching. And no flashbacks. Come on, I say. Uncle Carlos should have the burgers ready. We go into the backyard, hand in hand. He's smiling. And surprisingly, I am too. 10. We spend the night at Uncle Carlos's house, because the riot started again as soon as the sun went down. Somehow the store got spared. We should go to church and thank God for that. But Mama and I are too tired to sit through less than an hour of anything. Sikani wants to spend another day at Uncle Carlos's. So Sunday morning, we return to Garden Heights without him. Right as we get off the freeway, we're met by a police roadblock. Only one lane of traffic isn't blocked by a patrol car, and officers talk to drivers before letting them pass through. Suddenly it's as if someone grabbed my heart and twisted it.
Can we...
I swallow. Can we get around them?
Doubt it. They probably got these all around the neighborhood.
Mama glances over at me and frowns.
Munch? You okay?
I grab my door handle. They can easily grab their guns and leave us like Khalil. All the blood in our bodies pooling on the street for everybody to see. Our mouths wide open. Our eyes staring at the sky, searching for God.
Hey. Mama cups my cheek. Hey, look at me.
I try to, but my eyes are filled with tears. I'm so sick of being this damn weak. Khalil may have lost his life, but I lost something too. And it pisses me off.
It's okay, Mama says. We got this, all right? Close your eyes if you have to.
I do.
Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to.
The seconds drag by like hours. The officer asks Mama for her ID and proof of insurance, and I beg Black Jesus to get us home, hoping there won't be a gunshot as she searches through her purse. We finally drive off.
See, baby, she says, everything's fine.
Her words used to have power. If she said it was fine, it was fine. But after you've held two people as they took their last breaths, words like that don't mean shit anymore. I haven't let go of the car door handle when we pull into our driveway. Daddy comes out and knocks on my window. Mama rolls it down for me.
There go my girls.
He smiles, but it fades into a frown.
What's wrong?
You about to go somewhere, baby? Mama asks, meaning they'll talk later.
Yeah, gotta run to the warehouse and stock up.
He taps my shoulder.
Hey, wanna hang out with your daddy? I'll get you some ice cream. One of them big fat tubs that'll last about a month.
I laugh even though I don't feel like it. Daddy's talented like that. I don't need all that ice cream.
I ain't say you needed it. When we get back, we can watch that Harry Potter shit you like so much.
No.
What?
He asks. Daddy, you're the worst person to watch Harry Potter with. The whole time you're talking about... I deepen my voice.
Why don't they shoot that nigga Voldemort? Hey, it don't make sense that in all them movies and books, nobody thought to shoot him.
If it's not that, Mama says, you're giving your Harry Potter is about gangs theory.
It is, he says.
Okay, so it is a good theory. Daddy claims the Hogwarts houses are really gangs. They have their own colors, their own hideouts, and they're always riding for each other, like gangs. Harry, Ron, and Hermione never snitch on one another, just like gangbangers. Death Eaters even have matching tattoos. And look at Voldemort. They're scared to say his name, really. That he who must not be named stuff is like giving him a street name. That's some gangbanging shit right there.
Y'all know that make a lot of sense. Daddy says, just 'cause they was in England don't mean they wasn't gangbanging.
He looks at me.
So you down to hang with your old man today, or what?
I'm always down to hang out with him. We roll through the streets, Tupac blasting through the subwoofers. He's rapping about keeping your head up, and Daddy glances at me as he raps along, like he's telling me the same thing Tupac is.
I know you're fed up, baby. He nudges my chin. But keep your head up.
He sings with the chorus about how things will get easier. And I don't know if I want to cry because that's really speaking to me right now, or crack up because Daddy's singing is so horrible. Daddy says,
that was a deep dude right there. Real deep. They don't make rappers like that no more.
You're showing your age, Daddy.
Whatever. It's the truth. Rappers nowadays only care about money, hoes, and clothes.
Showing your age, I whisper.
Pac rapped about that stuff too, yeah. But he also cared about uplifting black people, says Daddy. Like he took the word nigger and gave it a whole new meaning. Never ignorant, getting goals accomplished. And he said thug life meant
the hate you give little infants F's everybody. I censor myself. This is my daddy I'm talking to, you know.
You know about that?
Yeah. Khalil told me what he thought it means. We were listening to Tupac right before, you know.
Aight. So what do you think it means?
You don't know? I ask.
I know. I want to hear what you think.
Here he goes, picking my brain. Khalil said it's about what society feeds us as youth and how it comes back and bites them later, I say. I think it's about more than youth, though. I think it's about us, period.
Us who?
He asks. Black people, minorities, poor people, everybody at the bottom in society.
The oppressed, says Daddy.
Yeah, we're the ones who get the short end of the stick, but we're the ones they fear the most. That's why the government targeted the Black Panthers, right? Because they were scared of the Panthers.
Uh-huh, Daddy says. The Panthers educated and empowered the people. That tactic of empowering the oppressed goes even further back than the Panthers, though. Name one.
Is he serious? He always makes me think. This one takes me a second. The Slave Rebellion of 1831, I say. Nat Turner empowered and educated other slaves, and it led to one of the biggest slave revolts in history.
Aight, you on it, he gives me dap. So what's the hate they're giving the little infants in today's society?
Racism?
You gotta get a little more detailed than that. Think about Khalil and his whole situation before he died.
He was a drug dealer. It hurts to say that. And possibly a gang member.
Why was he a drug dealer? Why are so many people in our neighborhood drug dealers?
I remember what Khalil said. He got tired of choosing between lights and food. They need money, I say, and they don't have a lot of other ways to get it.
Right. Lack of opportunities, Daddy says. Corporate America don't bring jobs to our communities, and they damn sure ain't quick to hire us. Then, shit, even if you do have a high school diploma, so many of the schools in our neighborhoods don't prepare us well enough. That's why when your mama talked about sending you and your brothers to Williamson, I agreed. Our schools don't get the resources to equip you like Williamson does. It's easier to find some crack than it is to find a good school around here. Now think about this, he says. How did the drugs even get in our neighborhood? This is a multi-billion dollar industry we talking about, baby. That shit has flown into our communities, but I don't know anybody with a private jet. Do you?
No.
Exactly. Drugs come from somewhere, and they're destroying our community, he says. You got folks like Brenda, who think they need them to survive. And then you got the Khalils, who think they need to sell them to survive. The Brendas can't get jobs unless they're clean, and they can't pay for rehab unless they got jobs. When the Khalils get arrested for selling drugs, they either spend most of their life in prison, another billion-dollar industry, or they have a hard time getting a real job and probably start selling drugs again. That's the hate they're giving us, baby. A system designed against us. That's thug life.
I hear you. But Khalil didn't have to sell drugs, I say. You stopped doing it.
True. But unless you're in his shoes, don't judge him.
It's easier to fall into that life than it is to stay out of it, especially in a situation like his. Now, one more question.
Really? Damn, he's messed with my head enough.
Yeah.
Really? He mocks in a high voice. I don't even sound like that.
After everything I've said, how does thug life apply to the protests and the riots?
I have to think about that one for a minute. Everybody's pissed 'cause 115 hasn't been charged, I say. But also because he's not the first one to do something like this and get away with it. It's been happening, and people will keep rioting until it changes. So I guess the system's still giving hate, and everybody's still getting fucked? Daddy laughs and gives me dap.
My girl, watch your mouth. But yeah, that's about right. And we won't stop getting fucked till it changes. That's the key. It's got to change.
A lump forms in my throat as the truth hits me hard. That's why people are speaking out, huh? Because it won't change if we don't say something.
Exactly. We can't be silent.
So I can't be silent. Daddy stills. He looks at me. I see the fight in his eyes. I matter more to him than a movement. I'm his baby. And I'll always be his baby. And if being silent means I'm safe, he's all for it. This is bigger than me and Khalil, though. This is about us, with a capital U, everybody who looks like us, feels like us, and is experiencing this pain with us, despite not knowing me or Khalil. My silence isn't helping us. Daddy fixes his gaze on the road again. He nods.
Yeah, can't be silent.
The trip to the warehouse is hell. You got all these people pushing big flatbeds around, and them things are hard to push as it is. And you gotta maneuver it while it's stacked with stuff. By the time we leave, I feel like Black Jesus snatched me from the depths of hell. Daddy does get me ice cream, though. Buying the stuff is only the first step. We unload it at the store, put it on the shelves, and we, scratch that, I put price stickers on all those bags of chips, cookies, and candies. I should have thought about that before I agreed to hang out with Daddy. While I do the hard work, he pays bills in his office. I'm putting stickers on the hot fries when somebody knocks on the front door.
We're closed!
I yell without looking. We have a sign. Can't they read? Obviously not. They knock again. Daddy appears in the doorway of his office.
We closed!
Another knock. Daddy disappears into his office and returns with his Glock. He's not supposed to carry it since he's a felon, but he says that technically he doesn't carry it. He keeps it in his office. He looks out at the person on the other side of the door.
What you want?
I'm hungry,
a guy says.
Can I buy something?
Daddy unlocks the door and holds it open.
You got 5 minutes.
Thanks. Devante says as he comes in. His afro puff has become a full-blown afro. He has this wild look about him, and I don't mean because of his hair, but like in his eyes. They're puffy and red and darting around. He barely gives me a nod when he passes. Daddy waits at the cash register with his piece. Devante glances outside. He looks at the chips. Fritos, Cheetos, or Doritos. His voice trails off as he glances again. He notices me watching him and looks at the chips.
Doritos. Your 5 minutes getting shorter,
Daddy says.
Damn, man, all right.
Devante grabs a bag of Fritos.
Can I get something to drink? Hurry up.
Devante goes to the refrigerators. I join Daddy at the cash register.
It's so obvious something is up. Devante keeps stretching his neck to look outside. His 5 minutes pass at least 3 times. It doesn't take anybody that long to choose between Coke, Pepsi, or Faygo. I'm sorry, but it doesn't.
Hey, Devante.
Daddy motions him to the cash register.
You trying to get the nerve to stick me up, or you running from somebody?
Hell nah, I ain't trying to stick you up. He takes out a wad of money and sets it on the counter. I'm paid. And I'm a king. I don't run from no damn body.
No, you hide in stores, I say. He glares at me, but Daddy tells him,
she right. You hiding from somebody. Kings or GDs?
It's not those GDs from the park, is it? I ask.
Why don't you mind your business?
He snaps.
You came in my daddy's business, so I am minding my business.
Hey, Daddy says. But for real, who you hiding from?
Devante stares at his scuffed-up chucks that are beyond the help of my cleaning kit.
King, he mumbles. Kings or king?
Daddy asks.
King, Devante repeats louder. He wants me to handle the dudes that killed my brother. I'm not trying to have that on me, though. Yeah, I heard about Dalvin, Daddy says. I'm sorry. What happened?
We were at Big D's party and some GDs stepped to him. They got into it and one of them cowards shot him in the back.
Oh, damn. That was the same party Khalil and I were at. Those were the gunshots that made us leave.
Big Mab, how'd you get out the game?
Devante asks. Daddy strokes his goatee, studying Devante.
The hard way, he eventually says. My daddy was a king lord, Adonis Carter, a straight-up OG.
Yo, Devante says, that's your pops, Big Don?
Yup, biggest drug dealer this city ever seen. Yo, man, that's crazy.
Devante's seriously fangirling right now.
I heard he had cops working for him and everything. He pulled in big money.
I heard my granddaddy was so busy pulling in big money that he didn't have time for Daddy. There are lots of pictures of Daddy when he was younger, wearing mink coats, playing with expensive toys, flashing jewelry, and Grandpa Don isn't in any of the pictures.
Probably so, Daddy says. I wouldn't know too much about that. He went to prison when I was 8, been there ever since. I'm his only child, his son. Everybody expected me to pick up where he left off. I became a king lord when I was 12. Shit, that was the only way to survive. Somebody was always coming at me 'cause of my pops. But if I was a king lord, I had folks to watch my back. Kinging became my life. I was down to die for it, say the word.
He glances at me.
Then I became a daddy, and I realized that king lord shit wasn't worth dying for. I wanted out. But you know how the game work. It ain't as easy as saying you done. King was the crown and he was my boy, but he couldn't let me out like that. I was making good money too. And it was honestly hard to consider walking away from it.
Yeah.
King says you're one of the best D-boys he ever knew,
Devante says.
Daddy shrugs.
I got it from my pops. But really, I was only good 'cause I never got caught. One day, me and King took a trip to do a pickup, and we got busted. Cops wanted to know who the weapons belonged to. King had 2 strikes, and that charge would have meant life. I didn't have a record, so I took the charge and got a few years in probation, loyal like a mother. Those were the hardest 3 years of my life. Growing up, I was pissed at my daddy for going to prison and leaving me. And there I was, in the same prison as him, missing out on my baby's lives.
Devante's eyebrows meet.
You were in prison with your pops?
Daddy nods.
All my life, people made him sound like a real king, you know what I'm saying? A legend. But he was a weak old man, regretting the time he missed with me. realest thing he ever told me was, don't repeat my mistakes.
Daddy looks at me again.
And I was doing that. I missed first days of school, all that. Had my baby wanting to call somebody else daddy because I wasn't there.
I look away. He knows how close Uncle Carlos and I became.
I was officially done with the King Lord shit, drug shit, all of it, Daddy says. And since I took that charge, King agreed to let me out. It made those 3 years worth it.
Devante's eyes dim like they do when he talks about his brother.
You had to go to prison to get out? I'm the exception, not the rule, Daddy says. When people say it's for life, it's for life. You gotta be willing to die in it or die for it. You want out? I don't want to go to prison.
He didn't ask you that, I say. He asked if you wanted out. Devante is quiet for a long time. He looks up at Daddy and says,
I just want to be alive, man.
Daddy strokes his goatee. He sighs.
I'll help you. But I promise, you go back to slinging or banging, you'll wish King would have got you when I'm done. You go to school? Yeah. What your grades look like?
Daddy asks. He shrugs.
What the hell is this?
Daddy imitates Devante's shrug.
You know what grades you get, so what kind?
I mean, I get A's and B's and shit, Devante says. I ain't dumb.
Alright, good. We gonna make sure you stay in school, too.
Man, I can't go back to Garden High, Devante says.
All them King Lords up in there, you know that's a death wish, right? I ain't say you was going there. We'll figure something out. In the meantime, you can work here in the store. You been staying home at night?
Nah. King got his boys watching for me over there.
Of course he do.
Daddy mumbles.
We'll figure something out with that, too. Star, show him how to do the price stickers.
You're really hiring him, just like that? I ask.
Whose store is this, Star?
Yours, but...
Nuff said. Show him how to do the price stickers.
Devante snickers. I want to punch him in his throat. Come on, I mumble. We sit cross-legged in the chip aisle. Daddy locks the front door and goes back in his office. I grab a jumbo bag of hot Cheetos and slap a 99-cent sticker on them.
You're supposed to show me how to do it,
Devante says. I am showing you. Watch. I grab another bag. He leans real close over my shoulder. Too close. Breathing in my ear and shit. I move my head and look at him. Do you mind?
What's your problem with me?
He asks.
You caught an attitude yesterday soon as I walked up. I ain't did nothing to you.
I put a sticker on some Doritos. No, but you did it to Dinesia and Kenya. And who knows how many other girls in Garden Heights.
Hold up. I ain't do nothing to Kenya.
You asked for her number, didn't you? Even though you're with Dinesia.
I'm not with Dinesia. I just danced with her at that party, he says. She the one who wanted to act like she was my girlfriend and got mad because I was talking to Kenya. If I wouldn't have been dealing with them, I could have...
He swallows.
I could have helped Dalvin. By the time I got to him, he was on the floor bleeding. All I could do was hold him.
I see myself sitting in a pool of blood, too. And try to tell him it would be okay, even though you knew
there was no chance in hell it would be.
We go quiet. I get one of those weird deja vu moments, though. I see myself sitting cross-legged like I am now, but I'm showing Khalil how to do the price stickers. We couldn't help Khalil with his situation before he died. Maybe we can help Devante. I hand him a bag of hot fries. I'm only going to explain how to use this price gun one time, and you better pay attention. He grins.
My attention's all yours, little mama.
Later, when I'm supposed to be asleep, my mom tells my dad in the hallway, "So he's hiding from King, and you think he should hide here?" Devante. Apparently, Daddy couldn't figure it out and decided that Devante should stay with us. Daddy dropped the two of us off a couple of hours ago before heading back to the store to protect it from the rioters. He just got back. He said our house is the one place King won't look for Devante.
"I had to do something," Daddy says.
"I understand that. And I know you think this is your do-over with Khalil."
"It ain't like that."
"Yeah, it is," she says softly. "I get it, baby. I have a ton of regrets regarding Khalil myself. But this... this is dangerous for our family."
"It's just for now. Devante can't stay in Garden Heights. This neighborhood ain't good for him."
"Wait, it's not good for him, but it's fine for our kids?"
"Come on, Lisa, it's late. I'm not trying to hear this right now. I've been at the store all night."
"And I've been up all night, worried about you. Worried about my babies being in this neighborhood."
"They fine. They ain't involved in none of that banging shit."
Mama scoffs. "Yeah, so fine that I have to drive almost an hour to get them to a decent school. And God forbid Sakani wants to play outside. I gotta drive to my brother's house, where I don't have to worry about him getting shot like his sister's best friend did." It's messed up that she could mean either Khalil or Natasha.
"Aight, let's say we move," Daddy said. "Then what? We just like all the other sellouts who leave and turn their backs on the neighborhood. We can change stuff around here, but instead we run? That's what you want to teach our kids?"
"I want my kids to enjoy life." "I get it, Maverick. You want to help your people out. I do too. That's why I bust my butt every day at that clinic. But moving out of the neighborhood won't mean you're not real. And it won't mean you can't help this community. You need to figure out what's more important, your family or Garden Heights. I've already made my choice."
"What you saying?"
"I'm saying I'll do what I gotta do for my babies." There are footsteps. Then a door closes. I stay up most of the night wondering what that means for them. Us. Okay, yeah, they've talked about moving before, but they weren't arguing about it like this until after Khalil died. If they break up, it'll be one more thing 115 takes from me. 11. Monday morning. I know something is up when I first step into Williamson. Folks are quiet as hell. Well, whispering, really. In little huddles in the halls and the atrium, like they're discussing plays during a basketball game. Haley and Maya find me before I find them. "Did you get the text?" Haley asks. That's the first thing she says. No hey or anything. I still don't have my phone, so I'm like, "What text?" She shows me hers. There's a big group text with about 100 names on it. Haley's older brother Remy sent out the first message. "Protesting today at first period." Then curly-haired dimpled Luke replied, "Hell yeah, free day, I'm game." And Remy came back with, "That's the point, dumbass." It's like somebody hit a pause button on my heart. "They're protesting for Khalil?" "Yeah," Haley says, all giddy and shit. "Perfect timing, too. I so did not study for that English exam. This is, like, the first time Remy actually came up with a good idea to get out of class. I mean, it's kind of messed up that we're protesting a drug dealer's death, but..." All my Williamson rules go out the door, and Star from Garden Heights shows up. "What the fuck that got to do with it?" Their mouths open into perfectly shaped O's. "Like, I mean... if he was a drug dealer," Haley says, "that explains why he got killed even though he wasn't doing shit? So it's cool he got killed?
But I thought you were protesting it.
We are. God. Lighten up, Star.